over to you and your team. Can you introduce the team to us, and then if we can start again with the budget part of it with the presentation, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start off by introducing the team that is going to present here, and then I'll just do a few opening remarks. We are now joined in this meeting, other than the members that have been here since this morning, by Major General Mukani. I apologize for the absence of Major General Mwabo, who is traveling with the minister on an important meeting abroad where they had to, could not have, you know, postponed. Major General Mwabo, Major General Mukani, the Acting Divisional Commissioner for Crime Intelligence and Protection Services, will be leading the presentation. There's also Major General De Kok, who is the head of research and statistics. Major General Brigadier Sihlabane, who is the acting head for protection services. And Kenneth Vuma, who is the section commander for management information and strategic planning in CIPS. Perhaps as I open here, just to mention that one of the developments that have taken place, Chairperson, is that the Protection Services and CI are now one division under the leadership of General Nwabo. Just some opening remarks on this area. I think I'd like to once more say to members that for the better part of the reporting year, the crime intelligence environment has unfortunately enjoyed what I call a superstar space in the public eye, but that did not necessarily impact on the work conducted by that division, as witnessed by the achievements that we shall be sharing today. The achievements that are related to the targets that we had set for 2011-2012 financial year. In relation to the above, we are aware that there were concerns raised by the committee when SAPS was tabling the 2012-2013 plan, and we are taking the necessary steps to deal with some of those issues, which included some of the following: the value of CI products, deemed lack of measurement targets for the CI area, the need to fill the vacancies that there are in the environment, the management issues in the public domain that were clearly, you know, a misplaced debate, given that no country would have those type of issues being debated and being discussed in newspapers. The utilization of CI at station level. In response, I'd like to put it on record that CI products are utilized by the clients such as detectives, DPCI, intervention, management of events, security assessment, and these have resulted in numerous achievements that have already been highlighted by those environments yesterday as well as today. Obviously, the environment did not simply work alone. We work in an integrated fashion, and CI is a very rudimentary contributor to the integrated delivery of our services. We are currently reviewing how the performance of CI is measured, given the public budget allocated to the division. This will be made visible in our APP for 2013-2014, which will be presented to the committee next year. Furthermore, we've addressed the development of CI members, which is very important because we believe capacity, skills need to be continuously improved, and that members need to be ready to deliver on the services of all the objectives for which they are appointed for. We Furthermore, we have addressed the deployment of CI members to operate also at station level. This is the rollout of the new structure that General Ngobo and his team are working on. The presentation will follow, that will follow, will provide you with a breakdown on how the vacancies will be filled. And in conclusion, allow me to chairperson and members to indicate that there is stability in the CI environment. And indeed, we continue to keep it that way, because if we are to be a global player in this place, we should never find ourselves in that space where our crime intelligence was a public football. Otherwise, we then do not have any intelligence in the country. Chairperson, thank you very much. With that, I'd like to hand over to General Mukami, who is going to, let me start off with General Skelly, who will lead with the budget for this environment. And immediately after that, we will hand over to General Mukami to do the presentation for CIPS.
Thank you, General Skelly.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me start then with Program 4, Crime Intelligence. The purpose, strategic objective and delivery arrangements will be performed by the line functionary themselves. If we then go to the funding, one will immediately see that this program consists of two sub-programs. The one being crime intelligence operations and the other one being intelligence and information management. The crime intelligence operations in 2010-11 was 750 million, and the actual expenditure, in 10-11 was 750 million, and the actual expenditure in 11-12 was 865 million, a 15.3% increase. Intelligence and information management, 1.197 billion, actual in a previous financial year, and then in the 11-12 financial year, 1.339 billion. 11.8%, all in all, 1.947 billion to 2.2047 billion, 13.19%, which is quite a credible increase year on year in this regard. If we then go to the second slide, and we indicate the spending performance and a few prominent aspects, one will immediately see that year on year there was an increase of from 1.9 billion to 2.2 billion. As I've already indicated, rounded off a percentage increase of 13.2%, of which most was spent on compensation. This is indeed a program with a very high compensation content because it is so personnel intensive. The number of personnel, according to the annual report, increased from 8723 for the whole program in 10-11 to 9053 as at 31 March 2012. This is a highly personnel intensive program, as I've indicated, and the personnel composition in terms of weight is 87%. If one then go further and we look at the other operational aspects, equipment and operational expenditure expenses, it includes 25.8 million spent on vehicles, 67.2 million on fuel, 37.7 million on maintenance and repair of vehicles, and 29.1 million on telecommunication. This is the crime intelligence amount for the open vote, for the open account, and does not include the secret services at all. This is not part of Vote 25 Police. Thank you, General. I now hand over to my colleague who will take us further.
Thank you, Chairperson, the National Commissioner, the Honourable Chairperson. My program is actually going to be based on Program 4, as both the National Commissioner together with General Skeda has alluded. I will be presenting pertaining to two specific programs, sub-programs for Program 4. Our first sub-program, which was the stipulated crime intelligence operation, the objective is to contribute to the neutralizing of crime by gathering, collecting, and analyzing intelligences that lead to an actionable policing activity. The priorities thereof are serious crime, including contact crime and geo crime, which are house robbery, business robbery, and hijinks. The second priority is security intelligence related crime, which include counter-terrorism, border security related matters, public stability, VIP security, taxi violence, intergroup violence, major events, and counterintelligence investigation. Our first indicator under sub-program crime intelligence operation is a number of network operations resulting from intelligence found. The target that was set before us for 2011-2012 was 26,805. In this area, for 2011-2012, we were able to actually achieve our performance in a sense that the total operation network that was conducted for 2011-2012 was 49,092. I would just kindly like to move to the second sub-program, which entitled Intelligence and Information Management. The priority, as it was stipulated in the first sub-program, are similar also in the second sub-program, which is serious crime, including contact crime, trio crime, which is house robbery, business robbery, and hijack. The second priority is security intelligence related crime, which is counter-terrorism, border security related matters, public stability, VIP security, taxi violence, intergroup violence, major event, and counter-intelligence investigation. And this sub-program, intelligence and information management, the indicator is a number of crime intelligence products relating to the first one being operational analysis report, which consists of profile, intelligence analysis report, communication analysis report, communication interception analysis report, and station and cluster trial threat analysis report. The targets that we have set before ourselves for 2011-2012 was 253,782. In terms of our performance for particular 2011-2012, the achievements that we have done in terms of our performance under operational analysis report, we were able to achieve our targets to 353,628. And I will therefore break it down further to give an indication into each and every product related to that. In profiles, we are able to reach our targets by 110,033. The intelligence analysis report was 137,228. On the communication analysis report, it was 15,388. On the communication interception analysis report, it was 8,299. Two station and cluster crime threat analysis, it was 82,608. So the second one is the strategic analysis reports, which include statistical reports and research reports. We were able to as well achieve our target in terms of the strategic analysis report to 281,904. When we further break it down to two, the first one being the statistical report, it we managed to achieve by 281,886. On the research report, we were able to achieve 18. As far as the two sub-programs pertaining to crime intelligence, in both key performance area of both sub-programs, we were able to achieve our targets. Furthermore, that we would like to bring to attention, as I've alluded in the previous slides pertaining to that, it is just an additional information that relates to that to show the committee to say of the 49,019 network operation conducted in 2011-2012, we're able to have 17,366 arrests and the recovery of goods valued to 6 billion. I would like to humbly appeal on this specific slide. It was supposed to read as the previous slide. The figures were actually not properly calculated. It's supposed to be 353,628. And the figure reflects as it was indicated in the previous slide, where we're giving an indication in different kinds of categories related to the report to that. As the National Commissioner,
can you repeat the figure?
The figures is 353,628. Yeah. As the National Commissioner did allude as we were starting, that certain area of concern that was being brought during the beginning of the financial year pertaining to the budget, one of the critical issues was the utilization of crime intelligence numbers and the capacity building within that environment. With regard to the utilization of the crime intelligence members at station level, a decision was taken by them in March 2012, whereby the station crime intelligence members fall under the command and control of the station commanders. And on the basis of that, the concern that was raised as to whether were they being effectively utilized in certain areas. In other areas, there was a discrepancy pertaining to that. As the National Commissioner did allude that in that area, we were able to be in a position to address the matter on that. Furthermore, pertaining to the capacity of crime intelligence, I'd like to give an indication to say that total granted cost for crime intelligence in terms of the ideal is 10,777. The total cost that will be filled is 8,687, but however, I do take cognizance that when the Divisional Commissioner Skepe was presenting, he gave us the current status in terms of the personnel being 9,053, which could have been created by the movements within the personnel, be it being transferred, but then some will be transferred out. That could have been the cause of the differentiation in terms of the figures pertaining to the two figures that are actually different. But we acknowledge how it was being presented and the discrepancy is basically pertaining to the movement of the personnel within an organization. Currently, as we speak, the total vacant post that we have in terms of the ideal is 2,140 based on the figure of 8,637. How we are intending to address that for that period 2011-2012, what we have done, we ensure so that we do the prioritization, take into consideration that vetting was one of the priority within the division. We have actually prioritized 88 posts of the total vacant posts that we have to ensure that we advertise the post and ensure that this post must and should be filled within 2011-2012. And other than that, we were able to identify 560 posts that were vacant between salary level 12 downwards that we intend to fill that post in the following category in a form of promotion, in a form of lateral transfer, in a form of also recruiting, advertising the post externally. Currently, we have put the milestone pertaining to ensuring that the 13 brigadier's post will be filled within 2012-2013, but we have put the mechanism in place. To the next slide is just an indication as to whether how the pie chart look in terms of the availability of vacant posts vis-a-vis the post that is being built within the environment. The Honourable Chair, I think that's the end of my presentation pertaining to crime intelligence.
I want you to continue with the protection services so that we can finish both presentations. My apologies for leaving. I had to call the Speaker's office. They were looking for me, so you can continue.
Thank you very much. Regarding the presentations pertaining to protection service, I'd like to start to give an indication that strategic objective and delivery arrangements. The purpose for protection services is to provide protection and security services to all identified dignitaries and government interests. The strategic objective that we placed before ourselves for 2011-2012 was to ensure that we minimize security violations by protecting foreign and local prominent people and securing strategic interests. The sub-programs that we have within Protection Security Service, it consists of three sub-programs. The first program being VIP Protection Service, the second sub-program being static and mobile security, and the final one being government security regulator.
Let's get it first through you, Chairperson, and can deal with the finances.
Let's get it.
Thank you, Chairperson. If we then look at program 5, the last program in the Vote Bullies, one will immediately see that it consists of 4 sub-programs comprising the following. VIP protection services, 690 million actual expenditure for the year 11-12. Static and mobile security, 665 million for the year 2011-12. The government security regulator, 75 million for the year under review, and then also support services, 174.385 million. These are the 4 sub-programs which form the program Protection Security Services. If we go to the next slide, we would like to highlight 2 areas specifically to members of this committee. The spending performance increased from 1.4 billion to 1.5 billion, 8.6%, and the number of personnel, members should just remember, decreased from 16,722 to 6,340 as at 31 March 2012. The reasons being there was a shift away from this program and the functions were clustered in the visible policing program from 2011-12, and personnel moved accordingly, and if you move personnel, you also funds follow function. And this, in essence, relates to the 2 high-level slides in this regard. Thank you, Chairperson. Colleague?
Thank you. You can continue with the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will therefore proceed with regards to the program pertaining to protection and security service. The sub-program one that I'm going to start with is the sub-program VIP protection. The priority thereof is minimize security violation relevant to protection of the president, the deputy president, the former president and their spouse, and other identified VIP while in transit. Our indicator is percentage of security provided in relation to security risks. Our target that we've set before ourselves for 2011-2012 was 100% protection provided without security breach. Our actual performance for 2011-2012 was 99.99% protection provided to 144,584 movements with only one security breach. In this area, we are not being able to achieve our targets because of the impact on one security breach that we've experienced, and the reason being that in certain areas we are not being able, the members, not to comply with the standard operational procedure. Chairperson, I would like to proceed. We just added some of the other slides, but I see that the slides that we have put are the slides that was just giving a categories of number of VIP we're protecting during that period. It's the total of the VIPs that were protected for that particular year, 2011-2012, are 357, which we have them in terms of all the following categories that are reflecting, starting from the presidential VIP, the national ministers, the deputy ministers, the speakers of parliament and judiciary, the national council of the province, the judges, the provincial VIP, the foreign VIPs, and ad hoc.
Ask that that slide be made available, because I don't think we have it.
For sure, we'll do it.
You can continue.
In the next slide, the Chair, we'd like to give a breakdown where we're explaining in terms of from the previous slide where we have indicated that there were 144 movements, 584 in transit protection movements that we have conducted within and outside South Africa, where we deemed to say that there was one security breach. The security breach actually occurred in Northern Cape, whereby the community threw stones at the vehicle of the MEC mayor in the same station with the appointment of the mayor. We had 298 VIP protection operations were conducted without any security breach, including protection of the following major and special events, being the COP17, whereby we had 14 head of state and 181 ministers, in that event. Also the ANC centenary, where we had 47 head of states and our 87 ministers. And other events that we had, it was COMESA, DADC, EAC, SACU Council of Ministers, and Chapter Summit, which consisted of 17 head of state and 81 ministers. And also we had another major event that was the International Labour Organization Labour Conference, whereby we had 2 head of state and 24 ministers. I will therefore move now to our second sub-program, which is static and mobile security. The sub-program static and mobile, our priority was to minimize security violation of strategic sites, venues and residents of all identified VIPs. Our indicator in this sub-program is percentage of security provided in relation to security breach. The target that was set before us for 2011-2012 was 100% protection provided without any security breach. Our actual performance was 99.99% protection provided to 295,344 protection operations with 3 security breaches. In this sub-program, Madam Chair, we're not being able to achieve our targets due to the non-maintenance of equipment that are maintained by other departments, and it was also due to the static protectors that did not comply to the operational procedure. Furthermore, that I need to explain pertaining to our sub-program, static and mobile, as we have alluded in the previous slide, that we had 95,344 static protection operation conducted to protect 28 installation government buildings and 109 VIP residents, whereby we have experienced 3 security breaches in Western Cape. Investigation were conducted in each of the security breaches, and corrective measures were instituted where applicable in terms of the South African Police disciplinary regulation against relevant members. Beneath you will get the table whereby it reflects where the security breaches had happened and how we have addressed all the issues. The first was the security breach happened in the VIP residence in Cape Town, whereby there was a theft pertaining to that, and the outcome pertaining to the status in terms of criminal and departmental cases. The criminal case is still at court. Members in terms of the departmental happened to resign before they even complete the departmental case pertaining to that. To the parliamentary, the second one is parliamentary conflict, the X-ray file. And there was an unauthorized entry towards that, and the members that were affected, the departmental case did take place, and we're giving the member a written warning. The final one has to do with the VIP residence also in Cape Town, whereby the offense was theft, and currently the criminal case is still under investigation. Madam Chair, we'd just like to show in the next slide that for the past 3 years in terms of how we are intending to deal with the matters pertaining to the security breach, we are in a position to give an indication in a form of a draft where we indicate in 2009 to 2010, we had about 11 breaches. We were able to decrease that number due to the mechanism that we put in place in 2010, 2011 to 8. And for 2010, 2011, it was 8. For 2011-2012, it was 3. Measures that we have implemented to try to ensure that we decrease security breaches within the strategic environment was one of the, which was daily briefing of members during the parade, increasing visit of static protectors by commanders during the shift, presenting of the basic VIP protection course and national key point training to static members, static protectors, which was a total of 593 that was dealt with in 2011 and 2012, conducting of a formal service evaluation, 14 of them were being done, unannounced visits, 64 of them were dealt by head of his delegation to evaluate the service standards within the environment. I would therefore kindly like to move to the final sub-program of protection and security service, which is the government security regulator. The priority related to that is to regulate physical security in the government sector and strategic installation. The priority indicator is percentage of identified strategic installation audited. The target that we have set before ourselves was 50%, which is 113 from the total of 227. 61% thereof was we able to achieve it. Out of that, it was 138 of the total of 227 identified strategic installation audit. And on that basis, we were able to achieve our target. To the second indicator, the percentage of national key point evaluated. The target that we set before ourselves was 98%, whereby we have able to deal with 171 from the total of 175. In this area, we're also being able to achieve our target of 98%, whereby 171 from the 175 national key points were evaluated. And the final indicator under the sub-program is percentage of advisory reports compiled in relation to requests received. The target that was being set was 95%, and we are able to actually achieve our performance by 99%, which is 146 from a total of 147 advisory reports were compiled. Madam Chair, on the next slide, it's just also additional information that we are actually making provision to give an indication that the additional regulatory function conducted in terms of the National Key Point Act 1980, Act 102, 180, whereby we give an indication that we had 25 security providers registered for 2011-2012, and out of the 1,555 applications for National Security Service Guards received, 39 criminal records detected, and 6 National Key Point Security Guards deregistered. We also had conducted 3 training provided to those that have been deregistered and 2 training institutions suspended. 3 government sector security council meeting was held for the period for 2011-2012, and in addition to that, we had 17 security officer liaison forum that was held in 2011-2012. Madam Chair, that leads to the end of my presentation. I thank you.
Anything, or can I? Thank you. Major General, ignore me saying that we don't have the slot we have. It's me that's confused, and I can only blame it on the time of day. Members, we're opening for questions on this program, these two programs, Crime Intelligence and Protection Services. Honourable Stuber, Honourable Kula Barnard, Honourable Sabia, Honourable Mleleki George, Honourable Legetu, and Honourable Molebatsi.
Thank you, Chair. Just on slide 289, capacitating crime intelligence, the total full post take out of 37, and then this priority was given to 88 vetting posts. I would like to know how many people working in this environment still needs to be vetted. And when do you foresee that they will be vetted? Because it is it's a process that takes time, and there's administrative problems also in getting a person vetted. That's the one thing. And then the other thing is that just then on the VIP protection, I just want to know, for the foreign VIP protection, is there a specialized unit, or do you make use of the whole VIP protection unit to go on to do section overseas for ministers or whoever they need to go. Thank you.
You know, I've been trying to think, and I couldn't quite recall, but I think it was 2 years ago, perhaps, the Protection Service just got a really big increase in their budget. And yet, here we are, we haven't spent the full budget. Now, there was the one VIP protection breach. I don't know how it was that Protection Services decided the MEC should be in the place where they were perhaps at risk. I'm presuming you've done a full investigation and you're trying to ensure such a thing doesn't happen again. I mean, I'm presuming that's standard operational procedure. Tell me if I'm wrong. The three static and mobile security breaches, how serious were they? I'm saying this because it looks as though there were break-ins at VIP residences. You know, if the VIP had been at home, it could have been catastrophic. So again, you know, what steps are being put into place to ensure that doesn't happen again? I must say I'm most impressed that you had 64 unannounced visits by head office. That has to be unheard of, and it's very impressive because I know, I believe that most visits done on all sides should be unannounced. Otherwise, out come the flowers and the food, and they expect you, and everybody's ready and waiting. But that's very impressive. Finally, the national key points. I just want to know, and I can't recall from the Act, what determines do you need, and who determines what is a national key point? I can't for the life of me remember what it says in the Act, which I'm sure we passed at some stage. But I just want to know how it's determined, how you choose it, and then how you go about securing it. Thank you.
Bidam? Thanks, Chakasin. Slide number 301. I would like to know why the member resigned under the IP resident scripture. Thanks.
Honourable Mr. George.
Madam Chair, probably we need some explanation. The number of vacant posts is too high. 2,140. The other thing, 88 vetting posts. Is it the reason why we always have a problem? I think that what was it, the ICD, where people would work for a long time, not in vetted, and the reason being that the vetting process takes long. Is this the 88, is this, 88 meeting post that causes this problem? Because you've got to look at this, because your work affects other departments. If you've got so many posts, meeting posts vacant, it's going to affect almost all departments because people, DGs and all those people must go through vetting. It means it's going to take long. The other thing is, parliamentary complex. I'm asking this because I've observed in this parliament that I mean ordinary, I'm not an intelligent person, but the up and down in this parliament, sometimes foreigner, sometimes this. Are you satisfied that there could be no problems in this parliament? Are you satisfied that your operation in this parliament, because this is a very important institution, it's one of the three key structures of government?
Can you switch off your microphones? Honourable Khete.
Thanks, Chair. Let me thank the presentation. I don't know which slide was this, but it talking about equipment and operational expenses. 37.7 million on maintenance and repair of vehicles. Earlier on we heard that there is a delay in maintaining and repairs, repairs done on vehicle, and this to me is a serious concern. Are you experiencing the same thing, or in your division things are better? A second issue that concerns me, slide 285, where you talk on priorities, you talk to taxi violence. We are using our communities, particularly the black communities, are using taxis daily, and this has been going on in the violence. But to make an inroads, I need to check with you that around 1996, when the formalization of the taxi association was done, there was a thick document called formalization of the taxi industry. Did you go into this document? Maybe that document is not well explained, because I used to be there. The requirement to form an association was about 30 people, but subsequent to that, these became a route-based association. As a result, could not meet the criteria, and people started to fight for the route. Maybe you must go into that document and analyze it. I think it's still being used. Lastly, Chair, Honorable George Muleki represented me very well on other questions. Thanks so much.
Honorable Molebatsi, sir, the question should be on program for the
Alcamo programs.
4 and 5.
Okay, thank you. In crime in Kilian, there is a 16% of vacancy rate. How do you plan to reduce this? My second question is, there is a variment made in the first quarter. Was it approved by Treasury? On program 5, can you tell us about the 4 million increase in revenue received for sale of capital assets? My other question is, on what project were foreign funds spent? Thanks, Chair.
But you guys forgot the ones on crime intelligence. The lack of measurable targets. That, for us as an oversight body, is very difficult. And I know the balancing act. I mean, you can't tell us certain things, we can't see certain things, and yet we're supposed to do a job that's quite difficult to do. And it's been suggested that perhaps we could ask you to put numeric weights of some description to the reports that you receive, which would give us some ability to determine quality overall. So could you give us some input? Is that even a possibility? I just wanted, in our earlier meeting, a month or two ago, we were told the acting head and the provincial head did not, at that stage, have security clearance. I wondered if that was still an issue, because you know, it seems to take a huge amount of time to get clearance. And I don't know if you may be negotiating with National Intelligence to try and speed the situation up, because in certain areas it's a crisis situation, it needs to be done. Is there some way of jumping the queue? I don't know, again. And then finally, you know, we do visit the stations, and I know how you're trying to work with your provinces, but there are no crime intelligence officers at so many of the stations, and one gets the impression that we're just not running crime intelligence-led investigations because of the distances involved and the difficulties. Is that going to be attended to? Is that a long-term goal, to have a crime intelligence unit at each station? all that, of course, the 16% vacancy rate has been referred to, and yet we were told by the National Police Commissioner that despite the chaos of the last year, that had no impact at all on the performance of this program, which actually leads me to ask why we have a general at the top, why we have provincial heads, why we don't just sweep it up in another division. If there was no impact at all with the chaos of the previous head and the removal of all the provincial heads, if that had no impact on your performance, then why do we actually have a top structure and can't we shove you under somewhere else? Save a lot of money for that.
Couple of questions on these two programs. The first one is also a financial question. Sorry, I just want to get to my page. The spending on motor vehicles, 37.7 million on maintenance and repair of vehicles. A huge amount. It's an exceptionally big amount. Can we get an explanation on that? Then the second part of that same question is whether measures have now been put in place in the crime intelligence environment to stop the abuse of official vehicles. You would remember, and I don't want to go unnecessarily into detail around this issue, but you would remember that there were issues about officials within crime intelligence having vehicles, their own vehicle, subsidized vehicles, using the GG vehicle. Well, it's not marked as a GG vehicle, but the same principle applies, using that vehicle. There were reports about even members not in the section driving very luxurious crime intelligence vehicles. And we're talking about senior managers within the SAPS. I mean, I don't want you to deny this because then you will force me to provide you the names, and I don't think that is necessary for this meeting. Have we put in place proper controls around this? There were also reports about family members driving vehicles, etc. Have we put the necessary controls in place to deal with that issue? I'm asking that question specifically also because of the fact that the 37 million is so high for maintenance. Sorry?
I'm just indicating, Chairperson, that you should just distinguish here also between the SSA vehicles and the open account vehicles.
Yeah, sure. But we're talking here about the open,
okay,
the open one. And that's where we had the problem previously as well, in terms of abuse of vehicles. I mean, I don't even want to go with the secret one. That's Mr. Stewart's problem. He serves on that committee. He can deal with it at that level. The vetting of crime intelligence officers, are you doing it internally or are you at getting NEO to do it? The issue of the measurement and the structures of the measurements and the reports given have been addressed. I'm not going to address that issue again. It was me who raised the issue previously about the quality of the reports and, you know, how do we, can't be quantity only, it must be quality as well. It needs to have some sort of weight added to this. But it is true that there are crime intelligence officers at stations. The minister in his previous budget debate, budget speech last year or the year before, I can't remember which one, made it clear, something that we agree with him, that crime intelligence should form the center pillar of policing, that we conduct operations, that any police officer that is out on the street should actually be an intelligence officer. They should learn to pick up on certain things, to report those things, etc., etc. And that forms the basis of your proactive policing, basis of special operations, etc., etc. How far have we gone in achieving that goal? Because what we found at station level, where there are crime intelligence officers, and this was acknowledged by crime intelligence themselves during the budget process, they are used as secretaries for management meetings, or they are used to compile the statistics to send up to national office. And in our own oversight visits, where we speak to these people, they actually complain that they're not even allowed to go out. They have sources, they can't go out, they can't speak to these sources. So they told we don't have a vehicle. I'm talking at station level. How do we address this problem? Because if we want intelligence to form the center pillar of fighting crime, it's intelligence, this ball, it is detection. How do we make sure that we actually address that problem at that level? And how do we make station commanders understand that the crime intelligence officer is more at the station, is more than just somebody that compiles statistics on behalf of management to send up to province, to send up to national? If we look at VIP protection services, I do not think we would be doing our duty if we don't raise the fact that there are still too many complaints, public complaints, about the behavior of VIP protection units and protection members, and that many of them are involved in incidents that they should not be involved in, or that you do not expect them to be involved in. What are we doing around that? We can see it even here in Parliament, the attitude of some of the members that are here, that you really have to address them at some points in terms of the way that they approach certain things, and sometimes even members. I mean, I find it extremely alarming when you leave this gate where we are now, right across from here, between 120 and 90 Plain Street, and you have protectors in uniform with the cap the wrong way around while they're protecting an on duty in Parliament. And when you address them on this, the attitude is, who do you think you are to ask me this question? And unfortunately that is happening. And if it's happening here, we understand that then why there is also attitudes that people are experiencing on roads, etc., etc. So what are we doing to correct those matters? Can you give us an understanding of the pressure that vetting of other departments or private that you need to do are putting on the service? Just an understanding, just so that we understand what is the pressure. I mean, we're going to finish today by asking General Skutter to present to us what the department have asked for the coming financial year. So we want to know if it's putting pressure, if you need more people, we need to know that so that we can make that recommendation as well. So just an understanding from our side on what it is. I want to understand, I'm not clear on why Program 5 and the support services have decreased so much in terms of spending compared to the previous year. Because if I look at the presentation, it indicates that as of the 31st of March 2012, protection services are moved towards, together with crime intelligence, one unit. Also, the staff that was moved to the other unit as well, how did that impact? Is that part of it, or is this the support? support services that we talk about here, is it because of the vacancies? Can't be. I mean, support services are surely not vacancies. Or are they?
Firstly, the two programs still remain separate, although they became one division. But secondly, also the support services decreased significantly because the support for railway and ports.
So it is that support that has made the impact. Okay, that makes sense then. I think that's it from me for this. As far as we are now, we can give the department opportunity to react to the questions. I will allow members, if something is not clear, to indicate and to ask follow-up questions on it. There have been no answers yet, so I hope you're not raising your hand, Mr. George. I will allow you a further question you can ask. Put on your microphone.
If they believe that they can't answer the question, I will not. Madam Chair, I have observed, not this year, they is what we call crime intelligence driven investigations. But there were situations where the police acted, and I asked myself sitting back, what information were they given by those who are supposed to collect information? Why did they act in the manner in which they acted? And I look at it and said, if they had more information, probably they would have acted different. There have been many events, even the recent one of Rustenburg. You can see, you ask yourself, what information? I'm not talking about when the thing happened before. Because when things like that happen, where many people are involved, you would assume that surely there are meetings and intelligence operations are supposed to have that information. There's been situations in South Africa where it is as if we're taken by surprise, there is no intelligence which fed the police and all structures, because the intelligence feeds to the police, to other structures of the police. To put it, are you satisfied with your performance in that phase?
The honourable member is being extremely creative by using the word Rustenburg, because he knows if he labelled it correctly that I would have ruled him out of order. But I will allow you to answer that question not related to that issue, because his issue is a broader issue. His issue is something that we've experienced even 2 years ago or 3 years ago with the attack on foreign nationals. Where we've also asked ourselves as the cluster within the CJS, why is it, where were our intelligence, not only crime intelligence, but also your national intelligence agents, where were they, why didn't they pick up on these things, especially if you think that we have CPS that are in the communities, etc. The recent violent protest in last year, specifically in Mpumalanga, is another example of it. The service delivery protest. The issue in Northern Cape and Kaptu and up there is another example where members of the public and members of other committees, like the Committee on Education, would come to us and say that they don't know what to do anymore. That they get information that this person's house is going to be burned down. They get that information prior to the event happening. They report it to the police. The police's response to it is, we want to catch the person red-handed. Which in the end resulted in houses being burned down. And in fact, you all know that the arrests that were made at a very late stage and are still not speaking to all the incidents that have happened there. So it's just the rationale behind how it's approached and why there is no, you know, why do we not get the feeling that there's actually a consideration of the intelligence, if there is intelligence coming forward on these incidents. I mean, here we have a whole community that have, that matriculants are basically not going to be able to write exams. They're going to write those exams, but whether they're going to pass is a different story in the Northern Cape because of the disruption. And somehow there seems to be no follow-through on these things. So if you can just comment on that, I just want to make it possible for you to answer the Honourable Member's question without referring to Rustenburg.
Chairperson, members are going to answer. I'm going to ask you to ask you to deal with this financial of issues, including just talking around how we budget on what we call funded and unfunded posts, because when the member talks about the posts on page slide 289, the issue of funded and unfunded posts will come in place. But maybe just before General Skete comes into place to deal with most of the questions that have been raised by Honourable Member Mulima, let me just say the issue of vetting in this environment is by and large inwardly focused. It is not for other departments. The increase in those numbers, we are saying it is important for us as SAP to start running a very focused process of vetting as well as the introduction of integrity management because of the issues that continue to be raised here. It is for that reason that we started saying for that to happen, it's important for them to give us a proposal and resourcing for this. I'm sure when we come back we'll be talking about some of the ideas that are being explored to even dedicate to the various environments so that we can move from our first phase of looking at the SMS going down to almost everybody. So that's the whole big process that is going to be, I'm sure the member will talk to. So those are, you know, the vetting that we're having is inward focus. But for certain senior management people and including them, then NIA becomes the platform that has got to vet us. But most of these people is to look into the organization and ensure that we can deal with them. Let me ask General Skete to deal with the budget-related issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I should first start by means of the vehement approval which was asked. You can't increase compensation if the Treasury does not approve it, so yes, compensation was indeed approved. There's also a letter to that effect. I still remember the person assigned it as the Deputy DG Public Finance in the National Treasury. On the other vehements, goods and services and so forth, the accounting officer can do it. We had a preliminary one as well as the final one has been audited and in order. Thank you, Chairperson, on that one. Spending on motor vehicles in the CI environment. I wanted to find out about the fleet, the number of the fleet. It's just a short time. I don't have it with me because I think if we look at that, we have to look at it also in relation to the number of the fleet. Maybe some of my colleagues will have the fleet strength here, and then she has it here, and then we can just look in that in relation to, because if it's that amount for a fleet of 50 vehicles, is obviously excessive. If the fleet increases because it's a ratio scenario, and if B, the chairperson is not happy, we can go back, analyze it, and send through tomorrow more a detailed breakdown of the kind of service. So I don't want to take a chance if I don't have the facts present. Secondly, if I can just maybe, can we maybe just go, Kevin, to that slide on the posts? The other one, I'm going to talk on behalf of my colleague, CI Van. There we are. Firstly, I've noted, and please correct me if I'm wrong, colleague, that it is supposed to be filled in 2012-13, both the 5-6-11-12 downwards as well as the 13 SMS. That's the current financial year. The report on the previous financial year. I can elaborate a bit on that, but I think it's outside the reporting period. Be that as it may, we work on, and the chairperson referred to the RAG and the revision of the RAG. Let me first refer to what currently is, and I will not going to refer to the revision. I'm not that acquainted. I know it is happening with certain aspects. because it works on the rule of multiplication in a formula-based aspect. But be that as it may, you get an ideal staff establishment. Then you get a granted staff establishment, and then you get a funded. Now, we try to get the granted and the funded as close as possible together. But it does sometimes happen that a granted is what other departments would call an approved staff establishment, of which a certain portion is then filled. And that portion that is being filled are then funded. But what you try to do is to get the funded and the granted the same. The funded and the ideal will never ever be the same in no department's case. And that's basically what they are referring there. Now, I haven't verified the precise figures. Are these figures in year or the previous financial year? Previous financial year, then they say the post granted were 10,777, and the post filled at that point in time was 8,637. The difference then, they say, is either ideal, which they would like to move to, and 88 vetting posts were indeed prioritized in this regard, but then we go to a 12-13 financial year. So that in essence is how it goes. I would just have loved to have a bit more information in this regard because I'm doing it from face value.
Your answer is raising a question of what is the funded post? What is the funded post? Can you give us a figure?
Well, the funded post in that financial year, I would just have to just see. The funded post was basically what was in the annual report.
I'm asking General McClarnick to give us an idea whether she knows. Do you have it available, the funded post?
No, Madam Chair, this point in time I haven't.
General Sitter, can you have a look at it and you can indicate to me when you've got it, please, so that we can look at it. Because the question is, the way it's there, we can't see what the actual vacancy is. Because the vacancy is between the funded post and the full post.
Can you just go back to the previous figures of mine? That is what is reported in the personnel tables at the back where we referred to from 10-11 to 11-12 to 9053.
That's the figure. So can we go back to the slide that we were just on? So 9053, there's basically 500 posts not filled. That's basically where we stand. And that's the 550 that you're looking at to fall downwards. Okay. The issue of the vehicles, do you know your vehicle fleet strength?
Currently, Madam Chair, the response that I can be in a position to provide at this point in time is only the open one.
Okay.
The open one is 2,102.
Then it's huge.
If that is, if that raises a question of the chairperson, let us look at it right to you as quickly as possible and just see what kind of, whether there were a few variances on some of the vehicles or whether it was an overall high unit cost. It might have been that there were a few, or not a few, a number of them, but a portion of them with a high various unit cost, or whether it was an average unit cost, which was high, then we can make an inference.
We will appreciate that because it raises questions. I mean, 2,000 at a 37 million rand maintenance cost is, and that doesn't even include your fuel costs and things, that's just maintenance. It's a huge, huge, I almost use a stronger word. It's a huge figure. It raises questions. You can continue. Thank you, Major Chair.
Madam Chair, the first question that you've actually raised, as the National Commissioner has alluded, pertaining to the status pertaining to the vetting within our environment, what I could just kindly give an indication, as he has alluded, that we did put a strategy in place. And currently how we are unfolding is we have up to the figures that we have to work with in terms of receiving the application within our members out of the total that currently are being vetted. We have actually received an application from the members that are in total 327, and currently they are busy investigating 296. And out of that, those that have been finalized and the certificate were issued is 66, which only with regards to the members within our environment. As she also indicated that the strategy that we've put in place, they are in two processes. One, it has to do with the personnel within the environment, and also the process that has to do with the senior managers. So the status quo pertaining to that in terms of that within our members is that to the senior managers, of the total of 705 senior managers, currently they are in the process of dealing with 56 that they are busy with, that are in process, and they have just only issued a certificate to only 11 of them. And basically, to those that are currently, they have a total personal strength of 115 that are responsible as investigating, crime intelligence investigating officers that have to do with the huge number of the personnel. But as she has alluded to that, senior managers, they have been dealt outside. The members of crime intelligence have been dealt internally.
Are you satisfied that you have enough capacity in this area?
One could actually say that in looking into the total strength of the South African Police Service, Madam Chair, I would say that we really need manpower. I think that's one of the other reasons that we have identified that we desperately want to address the issue of the 88 vetting officers, that we need to ensure that they are being appointed and that we are ensuring that they are actually doing this function. Hoping that as we are continuing looking into the personnel strength, we might even increase the figures in terms of the next financial year, but we are also going to view in terms of the performance thereof.
How long is it going to take to pull those 88 vetting posts?
What we have put, we have developed a milestone. A milestone is a process that starts from the beginning where we have identified and audited where we intend to prioritize the members. From there, we make a submission to head office. The head office does the authorization thereof. We intend to put the advert only for 14 days. And out of the 14 days, the process thereafter will be ensuring that we do the pre-screening, the interviews, and the relevant training. But our intention was that in terms of their strategy, we are intending that by the latest January, we should have finished the 88 post.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chairperson. With regard to the question, Chairperson and Honourable Members, with regard to the question of foreign VIPs, we do have specialised units in that regard. What it refers is that the VIPs that comes into the country, that is South Africa, that get protected. There are our local VIPs, of course, that goes beyond abroad, and they go with the protectors that do protection to them. With regard to the issue of SOPs, questioned by Honourable Ms. Barnard regarding the MEC, yes, there are SOPs that guide this. In this regard, yes, the members did not follow the SOPs in that they didn't get enough support from local stations when they were going for this meeting. The SOPs that, yes, they should always liaise with the local. So they alleged that the local police arrived while they were already there. Thanks. The question on the break-in at VIP residences, it is a concern. We agree with you, especially if VIPs would have been there. Part of the problem is also the fact of that some of the protectors might not have been screened well, because in some of these cases it was the protectors themselves. In one case, it's the protector himself that caused the theft. That's the same one that has been arrested, and they were the same one that resigned, but the case currently is still on. There was a drag on the case, because after the theft, he sold the property to Pakistani national, and when the court case is to start, there was a problem with interpretation, but it has since been resolved, so the case is going on. With regard to the
question of what determines a national key point. A national key point is any strategic installation which, if its security is affected, will have dire consequences for the country. There's quite various number of strategic, national key points, from petroleum to gas and to water to VIPs. It's quite a lot. So what determines that is that, as I said, any installation which, if its security is affected, will have will impact on the national security of the country. And of course, some national key points do get the national key points get declared by the Minister of Police. Requests are made in certain instances are made by the police SAPS ourselves, but some the national key point owner do request, and there is prescribed process that is followed in assessing whether the specific national key points do qualify as a national key point. The question of Honorable Member Sibiya about the member who resigned is the same member that I spoke about. He resigned before the disciplinary process was instituted against him. With regard to the issue, there was a question by Honorable Mulegi George about the parliamentary complex. Yes, it is true. Tourists normally go through the visitor center to get access to the parliamentary complex, but however, at some stage there was one or two you would have seen on the security bridges where tourists were found in the premises which they never went through the right channels, and in that regard, that's where actions do get taken against the members. We take note of the concern that of the house, that the attitude of our police within this precinct is of concern, and it will be attended to. On the question of crime intelligence investigations, normally how it happens is that police can take an action based on information which is is verified, but it is not intelligence. It depends if the information that the police have sometimes is called a tip-off, so before that gets verified sometimes then police will take action. And in cases where there is intelligence, normally the police action will follow thereafter. But also one must mention that there is what we call warning intelligence, which crime intelligence do send to the provincial commissioners, the cluster commanders, and they circulate to everybody. And that intelligence, the pre-warning intelligence, is also done with SMSs. So there is timely intelligence that gets sent to respective various roadblocks commanders to warn them about what is going to happen. And the operational units are supposed to respond to those specific intelligence. Sometimes it happens that way, sometimes not exactly that way. With regard to the question of the Honorable Member, Mr. Lacreto, of taxi violence, on this one, any member who have got information of the document, I think, can respond. Myself, I'm not aware of it, but will make means to get this document and analyze it with regard to taxi violence. What I know is that the most cause of taxi violence is about the fighting for the routes, which the Department of Transport in various provinces, they do allocate the routes to taxis, in some taxi associations. In some cases, there's more than one taxi association allocated the same route, and in some case, there is quite good cooperation and collaboration between the taxi association. But at some stage, you find that there is fights that erupt. But we'll do a follow-up on that specific document. The question about the project on the use of foreign funds, that one I addressed. On the question of measurable targets from the Honorable Member Ms. Barnett, it is something that was discussed early this year, and yes, crime intelligence is considering using similar models as the SSA, where reports are graded in terms of a scale of 1 to 5. So that specific model, the 18 divisional commissioner is still consulting and busy with regard to that. The finality, I cannot say guaranteed it will be the same as SSA, but it will depend eventually as to what measurable measure is then eventually adopted by the division. There was a question about the this one I'll give it to General de Kock about the control of vehicles in sea line and the one of station level. On the question of too many complaints by the public about the VIP members and as to what is being done, there was a review of the program in terms of training of the members, where it was brought to the attention to also regard other users of the road and even other public members. And we hope that it's going to bear fruit in the long term as the training intensifies. I think I'll give to General de Kock to respond on the others.
I will first respond on the honourable chair and members. I will first respond to the one on the stations. I think on a previous occasion, two previous occasions, there were reference to CI members at stations and the abuse or the misuse of members at that station. Now I can keep us busy for hours on the issue because it is indeed quite an issue. I joined the police in 95. Then there were no such members. 3 years later, as a result of the Auckland Committee of Inquiry into the gathering, the analysis and the distribution of crime information, or actually crime statistics at that stage, the so-called CIAC members were implemented at station level, the Crime Information Analysis Center members. Those members didn't have the function of gathering intelligence. Their main function was actually to understand through analysis of the crime statistics and other information, through crime mapping, through linkage analysis, through docket analysis, and through field work, going out to hotspots and do an environmental scan and those type of things, to explain the where, the when, the why, and the what of crime. And then also, through the linkage analysis, the who, which would then be given to the gatherers, which sit at the next level, which is cluster level, what we call the crime intelligence stations. And they will then go and collect on these linkages of cases. Now, when they were implemented around about 97, 98, we trained thousands of those CIAC members. We did it en masse. We trained them for 3-4 weeks each, and we trained about 2,000-3,000. The were placed at stations fall under the station commissioners, or at that same time the station commissioners, and where they used them correctly, it made a massive difference in the crime fighting capacity. But unfortunately, and this thing doesn't only happen in South Africa, where you implement intelligence-led policing, because this is intelligence-led policing, you always find the resistance in police culture for the implementation of such things. If I can just mention, Singapore took 21 years to implement intelligence-led policing. Today, it is working like a bomb there. And New York Police Service is another example of a police service struggling for more than 10 years to implement it. Okay, then the things started to work, and then we started with performance measurement. Now, the moment we started with performance measurement, again, we pick up problems, because now these members were used mainly, and if we look at the stats on the reports, you can clearly see it. They were mainly used to start to monitor the progress of performance, like on a daily basis, reporting to the station commander in the station CCF how many of certain crimes happened during the preceding 24 hours, and on a weekly basis and on a monthly basis, and also send reports to a higher level. So the focus went from analysis to this reporting just on statistics. And that is still the problem that we are struggling with today. Now, this was also discussed, I was present when it was discussed in this portfolio committee in, I think, around about March, April. Now, since then, I think I reported in that committee. Since then, I don't know, the National Commissioner now referred to a review of the station structures. But at that point, the station structure, which was approved then in March, places the CIO, the CIO's name later changed to the CIO. That then were taken out of intelligence and placed under Management Information Center, which made it even more difficult for them to do this job, because now they fall directly under the station commissioner, and the emphasis is more on the measurement of performance. So what we are doing from our side, and that's the only thing we can actually do from intelligence side, is to guide them through instructions. Now, I can show various instructions that we send out. This is one in 2008, which in detail described the job of a CIA, a CIAP or a CIO officer. Now, why we believe they should not, and that is actually an international tendency, why they should not work with sources and informers at station level, just CIO members, it's because those things are guided by legislation, and it's very difficult. You can make quite a mess of it. So that is done at the cluster level, at the 170-something intelligence stations. And there again, you find the very same CIO members sitting next to collectors and actually giving them the collection plan. That also tie on with another question: why do we sometimes seems we don't know of the xenophobia? Why did it happen 3 years ago and it seems that intelligence didn't know about xenophobia? I think we knew about xenophobia because it was reported before the time, many, many incidents. We could not forecast that it will then suddenly at a certain point go away into many areas and to a whole wave of very bad xenophobia in a May incident of 2008. But part of it is also that we have a problem with coverage, ground coverage. You don't have enough collectors. You don't have enough collectors in the right places. So even if you give them a collection plan, you say to them, there's three hijackers in this station, this is their modus operandi, this is what we know about them. They can't actually then go and operationalize that because they just don't have enough, there's not enough ground coverage. I think I've answered. The only way that we can control this is to constantly tell station commissioners or station commanders, this is how you should use these people, and show them the success where this issue is done. If they don't do it, then they won't achieve the success. Then to go to the vehicles, I don't have figures of
just before you go to the vehicles, what are you doing to get more collectors on the ground? Because that's obviously now the next question. If you say the challenge is that there's not, you have the information, but you have the information, there's three hijackers in this area, this is their modus operandi, but we don't have enough collectors to actually do it. What are you busy doing to put in place so that that can be addressed?
I think that will be part of the new strategy, which will be the task of the acting of the DEFCO.
Madam Chair, are you referring in terms of capacity? All right, I think I'll let the National Commissioner, other than the strategy, that's another point that I'll appreciate if she can add on that one.
Thanks, Chairperson. What I think the method to get a ground coverage that we deploy might not necessarily mean that you need to have thousands of members to be out there. It's about how we utilize the informants in deploying them. It's unfortunate that we might not be easily open to share the strategy, but we are convinced that with the strategy that we are developing, we'll be able to have a ground coverage to cover the whole country.
To keep you to that, to cover the whole country, I'm going to keep you to that. Continue, please.
On the motor vehicles, I can only speak for the open account vehicles, and I cannot speak the figures. On the other side, I mean, I think that is where the main abuse, if we just look at the media and what happened, what was said, that was where the main abuse actually happened. The examples that you were mentioning of family members and also the whole issue of senior SMS members using, having a finance card, using other, those were secret services. Vehicles. It were never open account vehicles as far as I can remember. That I don't see anymore. On the open account vehicles, the ordinary police, unmarked police vehicles, the 2000 something that we have heard of. Well, there the rules apply. We use those vehicles for work. There is a problem still at CI headquarters. Or CIA head office, which is located in an area of Pretoria where it is very, very difficult for members to travel to there. Public transport is virtually non-existent, or it is existent, but you have to travel, take three taxis or three taxis and a bus, and that is actually causing still a problem. But we have looked at that at various stages. But there is no general abuse of vehicles, using it for all kinds of purposes except official crime intelligence purposes, to attend to meetings, to go and do the work.
I think we will agree to that once we get the analysis of the 37 million that was spent on maintenance. Before that, I don't think we can agree to that for the 2,000 vehicles. I mean, it remains a very, very high amount. Is there any outstanding questions that you still want to respond to?
Madam Chair, the one of the other outstanding questions was the concern that you raised from your side pertaining to our static protectors, the being here. And on that note, I'll allow the Major General Tavali to respond in terms of how we are addressing the code of conduct to our personnel and the behavior there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, National Commission. In terms of the addressing the behavior of the static members within our environment, we have a system, Madam Chair, where if there would be a complaint, then it means all the VIPs that would, provide protection, whether it would be national or provincial, and also the installations that we indicated. So it means quarterly we have, sort of interaction in terms of looking at the service, level.
then it means in Parliament, for an example, would have a session with the Speaker and would check in terms of the services that were providing within the, you know, the Parliament itself, as it is also part and parcel of the national key point. And if, for an example, it's, you know, the residents that we refer to in terms of security breach, that is a similar process that would always do, you know, where would interact with a specific, you know, principal or VIP and check whether, what are the issues. And if, of course, it's an internal process that would have to check departmental, then we take departmental. But if, of course, then there would be, you know, criminal, you know, case that has to be opened, like the one that the DNC was referring to, a criminal case was opened, and hence that member, you know, was discharged. Because if then you are, you know, convicted in terms of a criminal, then it means automatically that you would have to, you know, be discharged from the service. So that is the process that we would normally do. And we also encourage, for an example, members of the parliament, if, of course, because all members that are deployed, because you would have static, which they wear, I mean, uniform, and they've got also name badges, then we can take those details and be able then to lodge a complaint. Then it means we're obliged, of course, to be able to respond accordingly, and then we'll take, you know, necessary, you know, steps around those members. So it means each and every member that we have, because hence we said that, you know, also over and above, we have, you know, quarterly that would do, you know, inspections from head office, from provincial, and also head office, where we look at all our facilities that we protect, whether in terms of static or in terms of in transit. Then it means then we look at whether there's compliance. If then there's no compliance, then it means we deal with that specific province or environment and be able also to give, you know, further feedback to the clients that we're giving. So that is the process that we normally do, Madam Chair.
Is there any other outstanding questions?
Yeah, I think that was the last one that was standing, except the ones that Honourable Barnard emphasized in terms of the way forward regarding the quality and the quantity of the figures that we are putting in place. That is something that we look into when we do our annual performance plan for 2012-13.
May I just say in regard to the static, the issue in terms of Parliament, I think the problem is members experience this, but you get the normal run of the day, and then you just don't want to go through the trouble of addressing it again. But I remember for instance, one of the things that happened often in Parliament is that you get inside the parking area, and there are vehicles parked on your parking space that does not belong to members or to people that are legally supposed to be parking in the area. Now that's a serious concern, because I mean, luckily South Africa don't have that many enemies, but driving in a vehicle that's not properly checked with an explosive device is very simple, and I mean that happens quite often. The other issue, I think, I can't remember whether it was last financial year or the year before, one of the members of the DA left their vehicle here. When they came back in the parking area, all four wheels were removed. Yeah. All four wheels were stolen from the vehicle. It was literally put on place on bricks. So those are the kinds of things that we're speaking about. And you know, that is a matter of concern. We're lucky insofar as so far there hasn't been any incidents. Although there was one incident in Parliament where the person was throwing things on members. I can't remember whether from the gallery. Yeah, and then obviously the parks remains the issue. And these issues we're not necessarily raising here today, but we know there are many, many, many breaches at the parks. Many breaches. I don't stay in the parks, so I'm not affected by it, but I know there are members who stay in the parks that actually know about these breaches.
Something I probably should have raised individually with you, but something I have noticed, is while a place like Acacia Park, you know, huge high walls, security and all the rest, at the weekends, they loan out the hall. So anybody goes in. So when you come back on Monday and Tuesday, well, you know, people are missing things from outside their houses. But they're actually, when we go in, they have to show you gold card, all the security, everything. But at the weekends, anybody can come in and attend things that are going on at the halls because Public Works have decided they have the right to loan the halls out inside the parks. Tell me what security is there. It's like a joke. Not happening. People steal my copper cables right off my prefab, flood my house. Not a house, prefab. So, you know, it's no safer inside than it is out, frankly.
Thanks, Chair. I think this environment talks about take that you need in this environment very able, highly skilled, trained people who can read the conditions now and future. I just want to check with you what is the minimum qualification required for these 9,053? What is the criteria, recruitment criteria that we are using on these people? Because I take that they must be able to read through my mind to an extent. Are you capacitating them? How do you do that? Thanks, Chair.
Chair, may we kindly ask him to rephrase the question? We are not certain as to whether you're speaking from on the crime intelligence point of view or are you talking from protection point of view?
Crime intelligence. I'm saying the personnel rate is 9,053. And I'm saying these should be highly skilled, capacitated, trained people to carry out their mandate of managing intelligence, analyzing crime information, provide technical support and crime prevention. Now I'm saying I'm just checking that these are not ordinary people, but they are highly trained people who become, to an extent, reading today and tomorrow, and they can read the weather, what is going to happen. Now I need to check with you, what is the recruitment criteria? What is the minimum qualification? How do you recruit them to do this very demanding work? Thanks.
I think the honourable member is basically asking your recruitment criteria for crime intelligence and whether you've got qualification requirements, etc. Betting we know is one of the criteria, but what are the other criteria that you use to select crime intelligence officer?
Thank you, Chair. Honourable member, I think the environment that has got, you know, different functions and responsibilities. The curriculum in terms of training of those doing analysis, it is available, it's something that can be shared easily. But in terms of the curriculum, in terms of the collectors, we might not be able to share in this committee. So that's what the differences are. There's quite a number of activities within the environment.
Criteria for selection, that's the curriculum. General the Cook?
Actually, when it comes to analysts, we can maybe broadly distinguish three kinds of analysts. We have on the station cluster level, we have the analysts that I referred to previously, the CIOs or the CIOs. Those people, we prefer they to actually use existing police officers. But people who are interested in analysis, who have an inquisitive mind, and they then receive a 4-week, at the present moment, they receive 4-week training, and that include a whole range of issues, crime mapping, linkage analysis, docket analysis, environmental scan, and also presentation, because they need the presentation skills to convince the station commissioner that there is a problem, and then also report writing. And we find that the ordinary police officers, if you train them in that and they have an inquisitive mind, they cope very well, and they also learn how to do some future, some scenarios, elementary scenarios. When it comes to the next level, it's the strategic analyst, which is actually basically social science researchers. That is my own office. And in that office, we try to at least, but we didn't succeed very much so far, to at least employ people with the honors. It can be police officers or people from outside, but we lose them quite quickly. But people with the honors, but preferably a master's degree in social science, either psychology, sociology, or criminology. And we then give them a training course of 4 weeks to make them to apply the knowledge that they learned at universities in the police to do analysis there, because we have our own unique circumstances. Then when it comes to what we call the operational analysts, those are the people who analyze hard intelligence and do profiling and so on. They also, there we prefer police officers, but also with the inquisitive mind and who like to, who really have maybe also a little bit of an investigative background. They must ask the right questions, and they must really ask the right questions from the collectors to get the information, and from the systems to get the information to build profiles and to do intelligence reports. They also have their own course of 3 weeks.
National Commissioner, I want to wrap up on this program. Is there something that you want to add? Thank you very much for the presentation. I think with the exception of the few outstanding issues that remains, and those like, for instance, the issue on the 37 million, I'm sorry to tell you, General Skitter, but we will need to have that evaluation by the latest, by tomorrow afternoon. And that's not our fault. It's simply the fact that our deadlines are also not determined by ourselves, and it needs to form part of our report. I do think members in general are more satisfied with the briefing that we've received today in terms of both of these programs than we were in the past. We will also follow up on those issues that we have highlighted that we need further information, etc. There's one outstanding matter before we can leave, and I know that neither the General nor the National Commissioner is very excited about this request of ours, but I want to remind you, I don't know why you feel this way, that the Family Protector is on record coming to Parliament to say, last week when she was here, I need more money to do X, Y, and Z. And so are the Department of Justice. We need more money, and this is how much more we need in order for us, for instance, one of the issues that they raised is the fact that they've got to carry the Marikana inquiry's cost, the Commission of Inquiry's cost, and that most probably will be quite a number of millions that they haven't budgeted for. So what is expected from us as members of Parliament? We no longer have a report on the annual report only. We have a BRR, a budget review report. Parliament is in the process of establishing a budget office. The move is that at some point, currently we are agreeing to budgets after it's been agreed to. We vote on budgets after it's been agreed to. The process that we are moving towards is that Parliament will make its inputs and recommendations before it gets to that point. In fact, so that Parliament will be in a position to change budgets, even after there's been agreement between Treasury and the departments. That is where the budget office, the finance committee, etc. comes in. So this year is the first year that committees are requested to ask departments, and ICAN has done so, the Secretariat has done so, I've given General Skutte an example of what it is that the Secretariat presented to the committee. We are asking you, we're not asking what was the conversation between yourselves and Treasury. That's not what we want to know. But we want to know, per program, we're asking more. And we're asking so much more. You don't know whether you're going to get it or not get it. But our report must also make the recommendation in this regard. What it is that you're asking for and why are you asking for it? Obviously you're asking more for personnel because there's the natural increases, etc., etc. But can you just take us through, General Skutte, per program, what it is that you're asking for, the extra amounts for the 2013-14 budget? It's not the budget that we are currently busy with or the year that we currently, it's not the appropriation, adjustment appropriation, it's the actual budget. So we're not asking you for details, but we're asking for you to say this is what we're asking extra and these are the reasons why we are asking for it extra. Then we also want you to comment specifically, and if you can't do it, National Commissioner has to do it, on the ring fence funding. This committee will have to make a recommendation on the ring fence funding for the simple reason of the non-expenditure of this ring fence funding. So we need to know, I think you've satisfied us to some extent that the ring fence funding will be utilized in the coming financial year, that you won't return 638 million rand to Treasury, of which the majority was ring fence funding. But we just need to get an assurance from management that the ring fence funding committee, yes, please, we still need that. We are going to utilize it. It will contribute towards the integrated justice system, and you will be seeing the results as a result of the funding that we are getting here. General Skutte, I'm going to give, I don't see the National Commissioner is going to start. National Commissioner, if you could take us through that, and then I will summarize for the 3 days, and then we open that.
Chairperson, this agenda item that we're dealing with, I would like to be on record that I'm, as the accounting officer for this environment, I'll be failing to put that disclaimer up front to say I'm being put in a very invidious position at this point in time, because not even my principal is aware that we'll be discussing, my principal being the minister, is aware that this budget is being requested for discussion at this meeting. I think if I had my own way, I would have rather erred on the right, on the side of caution, because not the PFMA or any record guides me on what to do in this matter. I appreciate what you are sharing with us in terms of future processes, and I hope that as accounting officers we'll be guided on how to deal with those. I'd like to put this on record because I would not want to be seen to have failed the accounting prescripts of the environment. We have prepared, but I'd like to put this on record to say there is nothing in the PFMA or anywhere else as accounting officer that guides me to deal with a pre-budget presentation.
Done so, we've taken note of.
Thank you, Chairperson. We've been sitting in the committee and we requested that it be compiled. I think I should just start off by saying that maybe we should provide you also with, tomorrow morning earliest, with a carefully worded request in this regard in order for you to include should you wish. Be that as it may, let me start off in brief. Obviously, there's a total budget process, and we're currently in the phase where the Ministers' Committee on the Budget are sitting. What we have asked are in accordance with the Treasury guidelines for the preparation of annual budgets. There were basically two scenarios. A holding budget scenario, that is, we go on as we are. Then there was also a scenario where certain reductions had to be effected, a 1%, 2%, 3% reduction scenario. But we've added a third one as well, where we say we take a holding budget and we indicate also needs in addition to that holding budget. That is very important for us and for the committee to understand that we have indicated the three scenarios. Then if I may, and that's why I say with your permission, because we haven't had time, we were in the committee, we would like to present something which are very, very carefully worded for the committee to include. But I'm going to start off with the holding budget as is. The holding budget currently for 12-13 obviously is 62.4. But that might change now because there are obviously adjustments to come, salary increases and so forth. Then the 2013-14, the budget is 66.921 billion. That's a 7% increase according to the inflators provided by the Treasury. Then 40-15, there's a 70.848 billion budget. That's a 5.9% increase based on the inflatory projections of the National Treasury. Then 2015-16, 74.107 billion, 4.6% increase on the previous financial year, also provided on the inflators by the National Treasury. Then we also requested additional funding. And for what did we request additional funding? We requested additional funding to look at the salary dispensation for the police. We have developed approximately 7 options, and it raises from 1 billion, for instance, up to a number of million. The reason being where we have to start looking at aspects such as in the detection environment, where you will have automatic progression in this regard. So we've developed a number of scenarios. We have also developed additional funding to sustain staffing levels. Remember, we took a cut last year. Basically, what we say is, can we put it back and we remain where we were? Then there's also a grade progression scenario for constable to sergeant, which we are have indicated. Then there is certain pension fund liabilities to the GEPF, specifically relating to the SALA pension fund and to the Deep Meadows Soweto pension fund, which we will have to absorb at some point in time. And that means we will have to have an additional funding in this regard. We've indicated that fuel and oil is hitting us hard in terms of the Treasury. It really is hitting us hard. And here's a graph. It's just a red graph. But you can see the upward slope in terms of fuel and oil. Not for the same amount, number of liters. It's just the price increase is hitting us a bit. Strengthening capacity to perform operational response services. There's a number of aspects underneath that which we have requested for. Especially operational response services, we would like, and I remember the slide, that we will have to strengthen our public order scenario and get it stabilized in time to come. Then also, enhancement of certain aspects of visible policing. Then also, specialized technical equipment for the protection and security environment. And then the last one, mega capital infrastructure projects, including a lab in the Pretoria and Gauteng vicinity. It has also been discussed in this committee. Those are basically the issues we will provide, as I've said, the detail to the chairperson together tomorrow with our aspect. And we're just going to repeat the aspects. The salary dispensation, where we have a number of options. Staffing levels and the sustainability thereof. We look at the grade progression, especially on constable sergeant. We look then at the liabilities of the GPF. Then we have the fuel and oil scenario. Perform operational response services and strengthening this whole thing about NIU's task force and public order policing. Enhancement of visible policing, special technical equipment for protection and security services, and then mega capital infrastructure projects where you have the things such as a similar Plattekloof lab in the Gauteng vicinity. These aspects were all arrived at by means of inputs received from the various environments. It was a consultative process. It was not just sitting there in a corner and deciding what's the scenario. We also had interaction with the environments in this regard. Now these in essence are the aspects which we will then provide in context to this committee.
Very much that you don't even have to provide us with the actual figures or not. This is enough. This is what we want. It's just to know these are the things. There's nothing here that this committee would say we don't agree with X, Y, or Z. That is the point of this exercise. It's for us to say to the National Treasury, because all these VRR reports are now going to the Finance Committee, of all committees. And the Finance Committee is going to work through them. And the Finance Committee will advise Treasury as well. So, the sensitivity is unnecessary. None of these issues, I think any member has a problem with, that is listed, what you've asked for more money. You were also one of the departments that took a cut last year. So this committee will support you that you don't take a cut. The issue outstanding for me is the issue around the ring fence funding. But I think we've addressed those. I think we have a commitment from such that we're not going to see a situation again where it's not spent, or where it's spent but it's not properly spent. And the National Commissioner indicated the project management offices that are going to look at it. I think the committee was satisfied also with the presentation that we got from the IT environment on how they are going to address those issues that were previously a problem. Supply chain management, even though it's still a challenge, there are processes in place. And I think that is one of the things that we can gather from the past 3 days, is that your underspending that you did have in the department was because of caution, was because of systems being put in place to make sure that there is no longer this, that there is no longer just spending for the sake of spending. I mean, as much as we criticize the fact that there were not delivery on stations that should have been built, etc., we would also much rather see that there's caution in this expenditure, rather than just paying contractors that are not going to do the job. So really, I think it's a new exercise for all of us. When we were first told to do it, I didn't also know what to do about this issue and how to deal with this issue. But this is what we want. This is the scenario we want. We don't need the actual announcement around this. We now know what you're asking for. We can, with a clear conscience, say in our report, we support the department in the request for the extra funding for the following aspects. Members, I want to, National Commissioner.
I think that's probably the last thing that you asked for this morning, that report on the numbers for the posts for promotion. I have the report for you. It was 5,209 posts, and they were national in allocation. They were not allocated by province, but we show how they actually panned out by province in the report that was submitted to you.
I ask that you just hand over that report to the committee secretary so that we can make it available to members. Thank you very much for that, National Commissioner. In summarizing the past 3 days, I think the first thing that we must say is that we want to congratulate the department on the quality of its annual report. We might still have issues in terms of performance, etc., but I think for the first time we feel that there is valuable information in the report that forms basis for going forward. While saying that, that's not saying that there can't be room for improvement, I think we've indicated certain things that we would like to see specifically reported on in the next annual report as well. But the way that the department has reported to the committee in the annual report actually can form a basis for going forward. And we want to congratulate the department in that. We know that it's not a process that is done in an hour or two, and that it actually takes a team to do so, and it takes the commitment of a lot of people to do so. National Commissioner, the issues that we criticize because of it coming over a long period of time. We criticize because we have not seen turnaround in those areas, not for a year or for 2 years or for 3 years, but for a couple of years longer than that. At the same time, I think what we did experience is that, at least from your side, and you are leading the collective, so therefore we would hope from the collective, that there is acknowledgement of those shortcomings. And more than that, we could already see that there are steps that are being taken to correct some of these issues. The challenge that you have now is by committing yourself to this committee when they were answering questions to say that we're doing this and this and this to correct that, is that the committee, and this is one committee that actually does do that because we prepare properly, will, when you come here next year for the annual report, remind you about these things that the management committed themselves to do. We do not expect a 180-degree turnaround in the first year either, but we want to see measurable differences in terms of this supply chain management, the quality of information that has been an issue for the Auditor General for many, many years, and I'm not referring to the Dent report. Those things we want to see a change in. We welcome what we believe we've started to turn the corner in terms of detective services. Started. And we must be very, very careful that we don't not complete that turn. So we're looking forward to the improved reporting on in that environment, but also the way that they're reporting, as you indicated yesterday as well. For Wispel as well, Wispel